all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Common Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's another beautiful day up north. Dare I say, more beautiful than the last. It's Friday morning, June 9th, 2023, and it's 45 degrees up here on the lake. Nice to have you along the Civic Media Radio Network, especially our new station, 93.5, The Tap in Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and all of the new stations that are serving Civic Media across Wisconsin. It's great to have you here. Or if you're watching the live video feed of this on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube through Up North News, we appreciate having you along. There's a lot going on. I'm just looking at the notes I wrote up yesterday, and those are stories like maybe 4, 5, and 6 based on what all has happened since then, with former President Donald Trump being indicted again, but this time federal charges that we're going to discuss. The Supreme Court made a surprising endorsement of the Voting Rights Act, which many of us thought the Supreme Court was on the verge of killing for good. Closer to the state level, Governor Evers and legislative Republicans reached a very comprehensive deal on budget matters that will definitely, much like the deal in Washington on the debt ceiling, there's something in there for everybody to not like, and there's something in there for everybody to say, oh, I didn't think I'd get that much. So I guess that means that's as good as it's going to get. We'll review the details of that. And then we have our Friday morning interview with Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil, a real grab bag of news to talk about. You've got the Saudi government takeover of the PGA Tour. You've got a major pharmaceutical company suing to keep your prescription drug prices high. There are more Republican candidates making a tepid entry into the presidential race. And then in our 7 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to a member of the Wisconsin Assembly, Democrat Melissa Ratcliffe, about expanding broadband. And the interesting part about this is that Republicans running the legislature say they don't like how President Biden spends money, but he seems to be their new bestie now that they're relying on him for expanding high-speed internet in the state and reducing to $0 their contribution on your behalf, it appears. We'll discuss that with Representative Ratcliffe. Also, it has been a head-spinning week for a major national newsroom. Mark Jacob will be around at 7:30 to help us understand what all has happened to CNN, falling so far, so fast, and even more so just in the past week. So as you see there, a very busy morning coming up ahead for us. Along the way, our phone line will be open at 844-967-2789. And Aaron, you're nearby that phone because we're going to get busy right off the top. We learned when we got into the station this morning, when I got to my desk here this morning, that we suddenly have Brewers tickets to give away for Saturday, which that's the good news. The bad news is, I guess that means you and I aren't going to the game on Saturday.
Yeah, I guess not. You know, maybe we shouldn't have set those tickets aside. No, we didn't do anything like
that.
There
we go. Well, cat's out of the bag now. And now, normally I tell you that we give those away at 6:50 during our history lesson and music break, but we've got 4 tickets, and I thought it was about time that we reward folks who are up at 6 o'clock in the morning listening to us. And so in about 5 minutes or so, I'm going to ask a ridiculously easy question, and the first caller in with the correct answer at 844-967-2789, who would like to go and can go to the Brewers-Oakland A's game tomorrow afternoon at 3:10. If you call in, you're first with the correct answer. You're going to get those tickets, provided that we can email them to you and that you haven't won anything for the past 30 days. You've seen the ridiculously easy question for 6 o'clock in the morning. Do you think it'll pass muster?
I don't know. It's pretty easy. If you have listened to the radio before in your life,
if you've listened to the radio, I dare say one time before.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're gonna do it. You know, when you kind of inhaled there for a second, you kind of, and it just reminded me of what I was doing all day yesterday. The wind shifted in a way that the wind came right over the lilacs that we have at the end of our driveway and pushed that right up into the open windows here. And I must have just looked ridiculous sometimes, just looking out my window and just going, it was perfect. It was just so great. In fact, it inspired me to go out later on and finally take the hard top off the Jeep Wrangler, put the soft top on, give it a nice wash, and drop the top. And we had a nice open air drive last evening. That was downright pleasant. That's one of those highlights of late spring.
I bet.
You can open the top or drop the top depending on your vehicle. It was just wonderful. The Up North News newsletter is out, comes out about 5 a.m. on weekdays, and it's Friday, and Christina Laurie loves herself a good fish fry, and so there's plenty of notes about fish fries across Wisconsin on there. And in there as well is my editorial on the war on chocolate milk, which is not a thing, does not exist. But to hear Congressman Tom Tiffany and right-wing media tell it, there is this war on chocolate milk that the Biden administration has declared. No, it has not. It has worked to reduce the amount of sugar in flavored milk, which, yes, if dairy producers didn't do that, could lead to a ban. But some three dozen dairy producers have already agreed to limit the amount of sugar going into flavored milk so that milk continues to be nutritious in schools. But of course, you can turn it into a war on chocolate milk in much the same way, you know, Starbucks hates Christmas and Bud Light and green M&Ms. And good Lord, it's so exhausting. But you can read more about that. The editorial is both on our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and in this morning's newsletter. So when we come back, we'll see what's new out there. Apparently, something going on with Donald Trump. We'll review that much more. Give away some Brewers tickets in just a couple of minutes here on Up North News Radio for a Friday.
Night and day, you are the one.
This note is not about Frank Sinatra, although it is to say that this is one of my favorite Frank Sinatra songs, but it is not a Frank Sinatra song. It is a Cole Porter song, the prolific songwriter, composer, born on this day in 1891. What a list of tunes that he has put together. I Get a Kick Out of You, You're the Top, In the Still of the Night, I've Got You Under My Skin, another Sinatra tune that I like so much. I always think of the Little River Band had a song in the 70s called Reminiscing. And there's a line in there that says, a Porter tune, and the background singers go, night and day, you know, made us dance across the room. Just such an impact that Cole Porter had in, at least the first half of 20th century American music. And, you know, it's to that end, we're going to use Cole Porter and his monstrous song catalog to give away two tickets to tomorrow afternoon's Milwaukee Brewers game. So the game is tomorrow afternoon, Saturday, 3:10 is the first pitch. If you can go to the game and can answer this ridiculously easy question about Cole Porter tunes and can have the tickets emailed to you, we'd love to do that for you. So here's the question. Which of these songs is not a Cole Porter song? Here we go. We've got I've Got You Under My Skin, I Get a Kick Out of You, In the Still of the Night, and Freebird. Which one is not a Cole Porter song? If you call 844-967-2789, first one with the correct answer, you get two great tickets to club seats at American Family Field tomorrow. So it's The Lovely, Night and Day, Freebird. Which one's not a Cole Porter tune? Call us up, get some Brewers tickets. All right, let's talk about the Brewers themselves. They wrapped up a three-game series yesterday afternoon. The Brewers, they went up early. They held a 3-0 lead through six. But then the Orioles scored in the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings to win 6-3 and avoid being swept by the Brewers. It was the bullpen that wasted a quality performance by starting pitcher Colin Ray, who struck out eight and allowed just three hits and one walk in five shutout innings. The Oakland A's come to town for three games starting tonight. Adrian Hauser will be on the mound. Saturday's game is at 3:10, as I mentioned. Sunday's game is at 1:10. And then next week, the Brewers travel to Minnesota to play the Twins at Target Field for games on Tuesday night and Wednesday afternoon. And if you are listening to Civic Media, you can hear the Brewers in the Fox Valley by listening to Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM and 1100 AM in the Fox Valley. You can also catch the Brewers on WRCE News from the Center in Richland Center, 107.7 FM, 1450 AM. As for that game on Saturday afternoon where we might have tickets to give away, Misty from Racine has called in and is on the line. And I don't think we stumped her. Misty, good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Well, I'm great. Would you like to go to a Brewers game tomorrow?
Sure, why not?
Well, sure, exactly why not? I mean, come on, tailgating and all the other good stuff. And even if the weather's not nice, there's a roof on the place, unlike Target Field. So tell me this, Misty, Cole Porter tunes. Which one of these is not a Cole Porter tune? It's delightful. I get a kick out of you, Night and Day, or Freebird?
Freebird.
Oh, God, Steve, you got it. All right. I don't know that I wouldn't have been surprised, you know, if Leonard Skinner had taken some kind of a Cole Porter tune and done something with it. They just didn't happen to do it to a Porter tune with Freebird. That's their own thing. Hey, Misty, thanks for listening so early in the morning and for calling in. Hope you have a great time at the game.
Thank you. I will. Thanks.
All right. And Aaron will get your information. Have a great day. All right. Let's turn our attention to some news notes. And yes, I know a lot of folks are thinking about the federal charges filed against Donald Trump, and we will get to that. But again, we want to provide as much state news as possible. And I want to not let the opportunity miss to talk about the arrangement that was worked out yesterday between the legislative Republicans and Governor Tony Evers. And it's comprehensive, so there's a lot of moving pieces here, but I do want to talk about it because it's a classic example of, you know, not everybody got everything they wanted. It's definitely not the deal I think any single person would have written in the legislature, but did everybody come together and avert, you know, things like, you know, a fiscal cliff or even bankruptcy for Milwaukee? Do we finally start putting some significant funds back into our K-12 schools? Yes, this deal does those things. Does it also, for people on the Republican side, does it put even more state tax dollars into voucher schools? Yes, it does. And I don't take a lot of solace in being right about this, but I'm pretty sure I was one of the first public voices out there telling people that the only way a deal was going to get done after Governor Evers won re-election was that both sides were going to have to say more money into the schools that we like. And as much as some of us would like to wave a magic wand and get rid of all state tax dollars going to voucher schools right here, right now, it's actually going to go the other way for at least a time. But in return, Republicans are going to give their votes to a proposal that also puts a big infusion of spending not only into public schools, but into local units of government as well. Governor Tony Evers put out the statement indicating that there's going to be more than $1 billion in spendable revenue. And that's a very important phrase, spendable revenue. Because 2 years ago, Republicans liked to say that they had put this massive amount of new money into K-12 education when they didn't. They used an accounting trick so that the money went into the books for K-12 schools, but they didn't lift the spending limits that they've put on public school districts. And so the money couldn't be spent by them. So it got passed through the school districts and right into property tax relief. Not that property tax relief is a bad thing. It's not. But then, you know, don't tell us you gave record money to schools. It wasn't spendable. This is more than $1 billion in spendable revenue. And that's a big victory for the governor. Evers also indicated the agreement adds $30 million in school-based mental health services. That is far less than what he requested, but it is far more than what was offered by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss in February, who said, quote, not going to happen. So what Evers wanted in total did not happen, but there also wasn't a goose egg. There is now $30 million more going to school-based mental health services to help with teens who are having issues. Special education reimbursement comes up. Again, not a lot. It's now coming from like anywhere from 20 to 30% up to 33%. What that means is special education costs a bit more in public school districts who have to take on all kids, whatever their needs. And the state used to reimburse 90% of the cost of special education for students and districts. It has fallen and fallen and fallen, and now it's going to come back up to 33%. But here's the thing that's going to make some of you mad. In voucher schools, it's still 90%. 90% reimbursement for special education there. As to Milwaukee, the city and the county, the Republicans wanted a referendum to say, well, you can levy, you know, higher taxes, you can levy a sales tax, but only if you hold an election and have a public referendum on it. And the city and the county didn't want to do that. They said, look, we already elect local leaders, let the local leaders decide on that. And so the compromise is that it will be up to the Milwaukee Common Council and the Milwaukee County Board to vote on a local sales tax, but it needs a two-thirds vote in order to pass. And if so, the city could implement a 2% sales tax, the county a 0.4% sales tax. All in all, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley said, the time is now to address local revenues and give communities across Wisconsin the resources they need to keep their constituents healthy and safe. Not everyone will get everything on their wish list, but this does expand the size of vouchers to private schools, but it also does increase the amount of shared revenue going to local units of government. So I would expect that in the end, this is the arrangement that passes and allows the rest of the state budget to get done, where, again, because of split control of government, nobody's going to get everything they want, but we're also far less likely to face the prospect of a budget that is late and putting a further crimp on services. So you have to hand it to both parties involved in the state capitol for getting a deal done there. All right, former President Donald Trump has been indicted. He has been charged with mishandling classified documents at his Florida estate, making him the first former president in U.S. history to face federal criminal charges by the federal government that he once oversaw. This includes the possibility of prison, but he also would have to be convicted first. And as I've said previously, I am concerned about what happens once any case against Trump goes into the jury room, no matter how well you screen a jury, as far as who's going to be in there and chooses their admiration for one man over the rule of law. But this does potentially upend a Republican presidential primary that Trump is running in. Trump, of course, continues to call it things like a witch hunt and, well, basically, just again, the irony of Donald Trump, who in 2016 helped encourage the chant of lock her up, talking about Hillary Clinton and the way that she handled sensitive information, for this guy to engage in the buffoonery of taking classified information in these documents out of the White House. And then once it was discovered that he had these, obstructing justice, lying about them, going through and pulling select ones out allegedly, you know, and making the case go that much longer. I mean, the irony is stunning and delicious all at once. So as far as what happens next, Trump said he's been summoned to appear in court Tuesday afternoon in Miami. It's not clear if Trump will make the appearance personally. When he was charged with state charges about hush money in Manhattan, he surrendered to authorities and was booked behind closed doors and appeared in court. That may not necessarily be required next week. But this is far from over. The hush money case is going on with Stormy Daniels up in New York. He still faces the prospect of being charged in Georgia, where he and his allies meddled in the 2020 election. And I'm not even going to say, you know, allegedly they did meddle. And the question is, you know, Would a jury convict Trump of illegally meddling in the 2020 election for their interference in Georgia? He's still being investigated for other activity to try to overturn the 2020 election. He's still being investigated for the amount of knowledge he had behind and encouragement of the Capitol riot of January 6th, 2021. And he faces civil cases in New York about misleading tax authorities and misleading banks about the value of his assets. So Donald Trump thought with enough bluster and confidence, he could essentially scare off or intimidate and avoid prosecution. And that's just not going to happen. We're just getting started, folks, with Donald Trump's post-presidency. We'll be back with Kia Bakil. You're up next. Our Friday morning conversations continue here on Up North News Radio with Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Bakil joining us from Los Angeles. Kia, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
So we have been taking in, of all the headlines this week, we so often start with politics and national politics. But I think, frankly, in talking about what's happening with the PGA Tour being swallowed up by the LIV Tour, the Saudi-backed the Al-Qaeda Golf League, as I've been calling it, it kind of gives us a chance to talk about international politics. And I know there's plenty of people who watch golf on the weekends and they don't want to think about the international politics, but you know what? Sometimes you need to know if the thing that you really like is being supported by people who are just frankly really bad. And maybe you need to know a bit more about that. Can you talk a bit about, you know, the LIV Tour, how the Saudi government is connected to that, and you know what that all means, that they have essentially bought out the PGA?
Yeah, basically the LIV Tour is this. So let me back up a minute. So Saudi Arabia is obviously an incredibly wealthy nation because of oil money. As oil becomes over the next couple of decades less integral in the global energy marketplace, they know that they need to find other ways to bring in revenue. And simultaneously, they have a terrible reputation internationally because of things like butchering Jamal Khashoggi, the Washington Post reporter, because, you know, a lot of the vast majority of the 9/11 attackers were from Saudi Arabia. They, you know, have countless human rights violations. It's a brutal government. And so what they've been doing very, very clearly over the last, you know, half decade to a decade is what's called sports washing, which is investing in Western sports, buying up sports teams, whether it's soccer in the UK or starting this competitive golf league, LIV, basically to try to distract from all the horrible things that government has done. And so what this is with LIV is, I believe it was a year or two ago, they created a competitor to the PGA Tour and just started paying outrageous sums of money to get folks like Phil Mickelson, who's one of the more prominent golfers in the world, and Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson to join. And this created a huge debacle with the PGA Tour, obviously, and the PGA chairman pretty much called out, you know, the moral bankruptness of LIV and of the athletes going to participate in it. But then you fast forward to this week, and that same PGA Tour chairman is basically handing over the reins. If you get into the details, this is effectively now a Saudi-run golf tour.
It's just amazing that, you know, first he was upset that they were offering all this big money to lure his players away, and then they finally figured out, just offer him the big money and watch how he changes his tune.
Yeah, it's, and look, there may be issues with the future of the viability of golf in the U.S. You know, they don't have a star like a Tiger Woods, but none of that, in my mind, as someone who has morals and doesn't put money above all else, none of that excuses this decision. Unfortunately, this is about one thing, and that is money, and that is all it's about.
And it's very unfortunate that way. And people can make their own decisions like these golfers did. It just, as I noted on Wednesday as well, I love the Green Bay Packers, but if I found out, you know, that, or the Milwaukee Brewers, if I found out that the, you know, the Saudi government had taken over Major League Baseball or the NFL, I would have to rethink, you know, what sports I'm watching. It's not, aren't you the one that posted maybe some other billionaire could set up a renegade golf league?
And you know what? For a hot second, I thought that was a great idea. And then do you know what killed that idea for me, don't you? Elon Musk.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Look, I'm not saying I would like to.
I would like a smart billionaire. I would like I'd like somebody just not Elon Musk to do it. All right. Let's turn to our next story here. And it's actually about the Inflation Reduction Act. And we spent so much time talking about the many things that it does. And one of those benefits deals with something that had been sought after for so long by progressives in Congress. And it was something so basic that would lower drug prices. But now it looks like that's something that's going to be dragged through court. Can you tell us more about what that provision is and what company is doing something about it?
Yeah, so part of the Inflation Reduction Act was a measure that would allow Medicare, which is, you know, the healthcare program for seniors, to negotiate drug prices on a handful of drugs starting in 2026. And these would be drugs that have been available for years that do not have a generic competitor. Basically, that means that the companies that produce these drugs can charge crazy amounts. And so, you know, there are drugs out there that seniors pay for that cost them an arm and a leg. And this law is just intended to kind of prevent that from happening by taking 10 to 15 drugs a year and trying to limit what can be charged to seniors who get their coverage through Medicare. Again, this does not cover people who are not on Medicare. It does not cover all drugs. It just covers some really common drugs that are, you know, the companies are able to price gouge basically because there's no competitor.
Right.
And so one of those companies is Merck, which made about almost $15 billion in profits last year. And that's an amount of money that no normal person can fathom, but that's a ton of money. And they filed a lawsuit this week claiming that this measure, you know, is draconian and would effectively violate the Constitution and basically would mean they could no longer invest in research and development. You know, all of which is I'm pretty skeptical of those claims. Big Pharma is not struggling remotely at all. And this is a modest reform that most other countries already have in place. But, you know, if you target corporate profits, they're not going to take it rolling over. So they filed a lawsuit and are trying to basically get an exemption just for Merck from this law.
We really just don't have the type of governmental system as we did, you know, a generation or two ago that can hold corporate America accountable and say, look, we want strong, healthy businesses, but we don't want price gouging and we don't want monopolies. And we just don't seem to be in that era, again, what I refer to as the Reaganism era of government right now.
Yeah, I mean, right now, like you just said, we have for the last 40 plus years, there's been an era of deregulation, of monopolies and mergers, of, you know, pharmaceutical companies having enormous sway over the government. And so what you have is, you know, to their credit, the Biden administration folks, you know, like Lina Khan, are trying to push back. And, you know, there's a robust anti-monopoly and antitrust movement. There's a movement finally to really try to rewrite healthcare laws and regulations on, you know, pharmaceutical companies and, you know, insurers. But it's at the beginning. That movement is still contending with 40 years of precedent. And so, you know, it's the system right now is not set up in a way to help ordinary consumers and families. It's set up to help companies like Merck. And now that the tides are shifting just ever so slightly, and I mean truly ever so slightly, you're getting this kind of pushback, which just shows how much power Merck has.
And for folks who may or may not have caught our show on Wednesday morning, this might be reminiscent of what you heard in our climate check segment about the Biden administration putting forward new rules for greenhouse gas emissions from power plants. It's something the Obama administration did, but got, again, a corporate lawsuit, got blocked in court. The Supreme Court threw it out. So it's not there haven't been attempts to, but you have sometimes a hostile Congress and sometimes a hostile judiciary, and the consumer, or in this case, the people breathing the air, you know, come out on the short end of that stick. Let us turn now to the 2024 presidential candidates, because we are soon to be reaching critical mass, the point at which Donald Trump just replays what he did in 2016, because the field is getting so big, and a couple of big names and one decidedly small name got into it. The big names, Chris Christie and Mike Pence, you can take them in whichever order you want, as far as, you know, one coming in just taking swings at Trump and the other definitely pulling his punches.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Christie is not going to win. There's no chance on earth he's going to win, but he is one of the only candidates who's willing to actually criticize Trump, take the fight to Trump, say the truth about Trump. And, you know, that's worthwhile. That's good to have in the field, because Ron DeSantis isn't doing it. He's tiptoeing around it. Mike Pence, despite almost being killed as a result of being Trump's VP and not overturning the election in 2020, he's not even really fighting Trump. It's a bunch of people fighting for second place. And at least Chris Christie is, you know, presenting something different. Again, he's not going to win. I'm skeptical many of these people have a shot. It's right now, as of this recording, there are 11 declared Republican candidates with varying degrees of, you know, name recognition, wealth, you know, and that field could grow. So it's, but that benefits Trump, as we saw in 2016. If you have a field of 11 people and Trump's already polling at 40%, the math just doesn't add up.
No, and you look at somebody like Mike Pence, who oftentimes looks like he's, you know, running to be, you know, America's, you know, pastor or something. And yet he has minuscule support of evangelical voters in Iowa based on a recent Des Moines Register poll. So Mike Pence, same as Chris Christie, is not getting that traction. So one must ask, Kia, if it's time for Doug Mentum, if it's time for Doug Burgum to emerge out of nowhere and become the Republican presidential nominee. And if you say, folks, who's Doug Burgum? Don't ask me. That's why Kia Vakil is our national correspondent. Kia, tell us all about this nominee in waiting.
So if Doug Burgum is the Republican governor of North Dakota, he is a former software executive who is independently wealthy, who entered politics in 2016, won his race as a surprise, and is now running for president, despite, you know, having about 1% of people in America know who he is outside of his state. That's a stat I made up, but I'm pretty sure it's accurate.
I was going to say, if you'd have said a little over 1% in North Dakota, I would have believed you, but, you know, he's the governor of North Dakota, but again, he made a lot of money, so therefore he thinks he's got what it takes.
He's one of several wealthy businessmen in this race. And look, I Burnham is a conservative. He's certainly not as extreme as Ron DeSantis or Donald Trump, but he's also no moderate. And, you know, this field is just pretty much all racing to the right. And, you know, Doug Burnham's, I guess, thinks he can carve out a lane. I am skeptical. If he gets the nomination, I will get a tattoo of his face on my arm. That's how confident I am that he will not win the nomination.
But meanwhile, Nikki Haley is in and is did a CNN town hall almost a week ago now. And really the only takeaway that I and you and others got from it was something that maybe the word I would use is grotesque, in terms of the way that she conflated, you know, what teenage girls are going through in terms of depression and angst, and somehow trying to use that to beat up on transgender youth. It was, in my mind, it was particularly shameful.
Yeah, it's one of the most cruel and just heartless things I've heard a candidate say so far this cycle. I anticipate that will change, unfortunately. But you know, basically she basically said that the existence of transgender teens and, you know, youth who might, you know, have a different agenda, who are transitioning or, you know, want to consider that, is the reason that we have a growing mental health crisis among teen girls, because, you know, of, it's just nonsense. You know, we have a growing mental health crisis for a litany of reasons. That includes, you know, the role of social media and smartphones. It includes the way parents are and adults are just attacking school boards and teachers all over the country. It includes, you know, body issues and the way our culture talks about women. It's a complicated and very real crisis that has absolutely nothing to do with transgender people.
No, it, like I said, it was particularly shameful. And with that, the only one we didn't really get to was Ron DeSantis. And it's just safe to say he's just not catching fire. You know, he was seen as the alternative. And at the moment, it's not happening. But again, it's very early and anything can happen, including Doug Mentum. I'm going to trademark that baby. Kia Vakil, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom out on the West Coast. Thank you, Kiel. Have a great weekend.
You too, Pat. Take care.
As always, you can read what Kia Vakil has to say over at our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Take a break here. We'll have our morning history lesson, a little music break, and then much more in our next hour with State Representative Melissa Ratcliffe on expanding broadband. We'll talk about the media with Mark Jacob, and Todd Albo will join us as well on this Friday morning. You're up north. Time for a little Jackie Wilson on a Friday morning.
Your love lifted me higher than I've ever been lifted before.
Jackie Wilson, born this day in 1934 in Detroit. On today's history lesson and music break sheet, we have a Wisconsin tie-in. Les Paul, a key developer of the electric guitar. Born in Waukesha on this day in 1915, Les William Paulsfuss. At the age of eight, this is him playing Alabama Bound right now. I'm telling you, that guy can play a little guitar. At the age of eight, Les Paul began playing the harmonica. He then invented a neck-worn harmonica holder, which allowed him to play both sides of the harmonica hands-free while accompanying himself on the guitar. Yeah, that thing. It's still manufactured to this day using his basic design.
So not only did the guy invent the electric guitar, or at least one of the main inventors of it, he invented the neck-mounted harmonica holder. All this stuff that we just accept as existing basically forever.
Right. He was one of the early pioneers in overdubbing and other ways of using technology. That's the end of my Les Paul knowledge. I kind of figured you might have one or two other little tidbits to share, but just nice to have a Wisconsin legend like this in music.
Yeah, definitely. And as one of the trivia questions for Brewers tickets a week or two ago was that Les Paul is the only person to be in the National Inventors Hall of Fame and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's right. So born this day, 1915. At first, you might, this is another one of those, like yesterday, we had the lead singer for Simply Red, whose name I've already forgotten. and you would not recognize Pete Byrne necessarily, but you knew in the 80s, the group Naked Eyes and a couple of hits like this one.
I walk along the city streets you used to walk along.
Again, that's Pete Byrne, who is 69 years old, born this day in 1954. And then we move closer to the current day. We move to the 1990s, and you can't talk about 1990 without mentioning a guy named MC Hammer.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Yep, it was on this day in 1990 that Hammer's album, Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Him, becomes just the second rap album to reach number one on the charts. The first one was by the Beastie Boys, Licensed to Ill. On this day in 1990, Wilson Phillips hit number one with their song Hold On. That, of course, Wilson Phillips was made up of Wendy and Carney Wilson, the daughters of Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, and then China Phillips, who was born to John and Michelle Phillips of the Mamas and the Papas. Rihanna had the number one song this day in 2007 and had that number one spot for 7 weeks with Umbrella. On this day in 1998, Jimmy Buffett's memoir, A Pirate Looks at 50, is released and reached number one on the New York Times bestseller list for nonfiction. The title is taken from his 1974 song, A Pirate Looks at 40. I remember picking up A Pirate Looks at 50 when it first came out. It was a surprisingly good book about, you know, life in the Caribbean. And now I wonder how, again, he's a little bit older than me. He's in his mid-70s now, and I don't recall him doing anything about A Pirate Looks at 60 or 70. But as somebody who's staring down the barrel at 60, I'm going to have to look around and see if Jimmy Buffett did anything for that. A couple of history notes to tell you about. First off, I want to mention from the Up North News daily newsletter, we've been at this for 3.5 years now. And so going back into the time capsule of the newsletters, it was on this day 3 years ago, June 9th, 2020, that Wisconsin's death toll from COVID had hit 647. It would later, of course, go on to more than 16,000. One of our stories that day was about how graduation ceremonies couldn't be held, at least not indoors. And so some creative people moved them outdoors. And we had a feature story on graduation ceremonies taking place at drive-in movie theaters. 2 years ago on this date, a note from the legislature. Despite news of an expected $4 billion surplus, Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee cut more of Governor Tony Evers' proposed budget, cutting transit budget requests in half, but only for Madison and Milwaukee, of course. The Republicans also cut Evers' proposal for the UW system building projects from $1 billion to about $600 million. In all, they cut $1 billion from Evers' total requests for capital projects across the state. Those projects are still needed. They just get more expensive. And on this day, 1 year ago, Michael Gableman, the investigator, quote unquote, hired by legislative Republicans to look into the 2020 presidential election. That same Michael Gableman, who had called for decertifying the results of the 2020 election, referred to the Democratic members of the Wisconsin Elections Commission as leftists who had engaged in lawless actions. And so, as I asked a year ago in the newsletter, Michael Gableman's final report should be fair and credible, right? Except Michael Gableman is no longer around. And on a somewhat related note, it was on this day in 1954 that Wisconsin Senator Joseph McCarthy finally received his comeuppance for the red baiting and the red scare of the early 50s, referring to anybody that he didn't like as a communist in much the same way you hear people referring to socialists these days with somebody that they don't agree with. And Special Counsel for the United States Army, Joseph Welch, finally lashed out at one of the congressional hearings, giving McCarthy a very famous rebuke.
That it has been labeled long before he became a member, as early as 1944.
Senator, may we not drop this? I did you, I think, no personal injury, Mr. Cole.
No, sir.
And if I did, I beg your pardon. Let us not assassinate this lad further, Senator. You've done enough. Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency?
And you know, back then, that shut up McCarthy. He was silent for quite a while there after being asked if he'd had no sense of decency any longer. And I only wish that we still had that in this country, where people could be rebuked and essentially stopped in their tracks for crossing some kind of a line. Now we reward it. I couldn't help but notice, looking at all the coverage of Donald Trump being indicted, and my favorite gif was the time when Hillary Clinton went and testified for 11 hours in Capitol Hill over the Benghazi controversy, and how she answered every question, when all Donald Trump has had to do is hurl insults. And maybe, just maybe, this new court case is a chance for history to say to Donald Trump, have you no sense of decency, sir, at long last? We will talk to State Representative Melissa Ratcliffe next, coming up and talking about expanding broadband in Wisconsin. That's ahead on this Friday. You're up north.